It's time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
Boston. My name is John Paul, the Car Doctor, here to help you with your car problems. Back in the studio. I haven't been here in a couple of weeks, broadcasting from my kitchen table, but I'm back in the studio. And what have I noticed new in Quincy in the last couple of weeks? Well, the yellow bikes are gone and the lime bikes are back or here or something. So the whole yellow bike experiment, I guess, didn't do that well. The company picked them all up and disappeared, but they've been replaced by Lime Bike, which is a same idea. It's a dockless bicycle. I guess they're getting some positive and negative press. It sounds in theory like a good idea. You find a bicycle and you use your phone app and you go and ride it to wherever you need to go, and you just lock it, leave it, and the next person uses it when they want it. Except for the people that threw them in the ocean. And so that didn't work out. But yellow bikes are gone. Lime bikes are back. As I came to the station today, I saw some of the new Lime bikes here and there around the city. And interesting to see. And we'll have to see how that all goes. Well, I guess sales are good at Tesla. The $7,500 federal tax credit for electric cars is set to begin phasing out for Tesla buyers, according to the company's website. The automaker is the first to trigger the reduced incentive in the U.S. Tesla spokesman said the company delivered its 200,000th vehicle in the U.S. this month, so the full $7,500 credit will remain in place until December 31st. The incentive then will be no more than $3,750 for the first half of 2019, then cut in half again starting in July before going away at the end of next year, unless something changes with the program. And the same thing happened with the Toyota Prius. The Toyota Prius had a $3,750 credit, and they sold so many of them that the credit finally went away. Interesting note about electric cars, too. New homes built in the United Kingdom soon will be required to have charge points for their electric vehicle, according to a government report. The UK also will boost investment in electric car infrastructure, including a £400 million fund. I guess that's about $550 million for companies that produce and install charging points, as it seeks to encourage consumers to move away from carbon-polluting vehicles. A $53 million program will be introduced to test the low-cost wireless charging technology. We'll have to see how that goes. Speaking of which, I've been on YouTube, and there's a local guy, Massachusetts guy, actually, Rich Rebuilds, and he actually has bought a couple of wrecked Teslas, and he's been rebuilding them, and he's got a really interesting YouTube channel. I sent him an email the other day and asked him if he wanted to be on the program, and he said yes. We're just trying to work out a date. We'll have to see where that goes. But it sounds he's got a lot of things going for him. So and it's a pretty interesting thing. And I'm really interested in what Tesla thinks of him, because talk about a car that right to repair has. It's pretty hard to get into Tesla's infrastructure to try to do anything. Today's, here in Massachusetts, a couple of years ago, we passed the Right to Repair initiative, and it was a memorandum of understanding for all the states, which said if a car manufacturer produces a vehicle, the information that is available to the dealer has to be available to anyone who wants it, and that can be for a fee, but it has to be available. I don't believe Tesla is saying that. Here's an interesting thing. It says in this article, one of the industry's most coveted auto components is that certain things that are so hard to replicate, new car smell. As the feature fades in time, the interiors suppliers and others believe aromas have a role to play in future vehicles. But this company is coming up with aromas that are supposed to help prevent car sickness. So they're researching how certain fragrances can be incorporated into the autonomous vehicle interior. So if you're in a self-driving car and you're starting to feel nauseous, apparently they're going to pump some nice smelling thing into the car so you don't get nauseous. I guess. I mean, it could work, I suppose. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. And Honda has a new Honda Passport coming out. It's a mid-size crossover, which may be unveiled in November at the Los Angeles Auto Show. It's been spotted testing in California. The Passport will slot between the CR-V and the Pilot. You remember the old Passport name. That was, it's been around, in other iterations, I guess. And it's expected to be about 6 inches shorter than the Pilot and compete with the Ford Edge and the Nissan Murano. Well, we'll see how this all goes. Have you ever been stuck and you just can't find the right part for your car? You know, you try the local parts store, the dealer, but still come up empty. Do you ever think about eBay? I mean, I go on eBay for a lot of things, but not so much parts. But with us on the phone is Marie Naroski. She's the director of parts and accessories for eBay Motors. Marie, a lot of people think of eBay for shopping, but not always shopping for auto parts.
Yeah. We're actually one of the largest marketplaces for buying and selling all things automotive. And with over 80 million listings on our site, we have a lot of depth and breadth with our inventory, ranging from genuine OEM parts, aftermarket parts, private label parts, you name it. So yeah, we're a great marketplace for parts and accessories.
Yeah, in fact, I had a call from someone a few weeks ago, and they were looking for a part, and their local dealer told them it was going to be at least 60 days before they saw the part because it was on some sort of back order. Their independent repair shop called the same dealership, got the same answer, and this woman said, what am I supposed to do? And I checked, and sure enough, it was on eBay, and she could have had it the next day. So, you know, really, really does help a lot, whether you're an independent repair shop or maybe even a dealership, but certainly for someone who does your own work. And you guys just did a survey about automotive DIYers, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We found that there were two major pain points in our DIY survey for our DIYs. Right, we found that nearly 50% of DIYers buy the wrong part for their car, that it's not compatible with their vehicle. Right, and that's a large percentage of people, you know, when they go either online to shop for a part or offline, that they buy the wrong part. Right, there are thousands of parts on a car, and it can be tough to find that one that fits your specific car. For example, a Ford Mustang or versus a Chevy Camaro. The second pain point we found that with our DIY is that 70% have started a car repair before realizing they didn't have all the right parts to finish the job. So those two major pain points are really out there. We wanted to focus on these new features that we were creating on those two pain points so that it would make it easier for our buyers to find the parts that they're looking for and all the parts that they're looking for a specific repair.
So how come it's so hard to find a part? Isn't it just as easy as you go to a parts page and look it up and find it? But I guess that's not the case, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, with finding the parts on a car, you know, it can be really tough to know, first of all, is this part compatible for your vehicle? So with our feature, My Garage, that we recently revamped, we ask you that question up front, even before you start shopping. What is your year, make, model, trim, engine? To ensure that you are showcased parts that only fit your vehicle, right? And then with that second pain point of, you know, 70% have started a car repair, but they didn't realize they had all the parts they needed, We just recently launched our new feature called Shop by Diagram, which includes a drawing of the schematic area system, for example, brakes. So if you're doing a brake job, you can click around on all those parts without having to know the exact part number or what that part is exactly called. For example, if you were changing out brake pads, you could click on that brake pad for your year, make, model, trim, engine, and you hit shop now, and you will be showcased a list of parts, that a list of listings for that exact part. So it really takes the guesswork out of having to know what part fits your car exactly.
Yeah, it really does, and I was kind of tinkering around the site a little bit today, and you're very specific about the model car, too. I happened to look up my wife's Volkswagen, and it even broke it down finer than, it's a Volkswagen, it's a Beetle convertible, but it even had very specific trim levels that I don't remember seeing anyplace else, which really helps, you know, hone in on exactly what part you're looking for and if that part's going to be different across a different trim level.
Yep, that's exactly right. There are, you know, different parts on the car that can vary even to the trim and engine level, right? So we're sure to ask our buyers up front, not just their year, make, model, but their trim and engine as well, to ensure, again, that we're surfacing those parts that actually will fit their car. So really to minimize returns or that frustration with a DIYer where they buy the wrong part and they have to wait, you know, or, you know, have to return that part to get the right one that fits their vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, that's really important, and it is frustrating, especially if it's, you know, it's a beautiful Saturday morning, and you're out there ready to work on your car, your parts all showed up this week, and you found out that, oh, I should have ordered those clips, or I should have ordered that water pump, or whatever the case is that you didn't order, and it sounds like being able to do this helps. And another feature, I guess, for the do-it-yourselfer who's maybe got some talent to be able to do this, but they're maybe not 100% sure, and they know they're looking under the hood of their car, or like you said, they're looking at their brakes or something, and they know that something's broken, but they don't know what it is, and a lot of times they might even be embarrassed to go to the auto parts store and say, I kind of need one of these, but I don't know what it is, but your kind of diagrams help with that a lot and help identify the parts.
Yeah, they do. And we actually have another feature on our site. As you're shopping around and maybe you're not quite sure or confident that you might be able to do that repair, is it's called Virtual Tech. And what that is it's a 10-minute call or a 20-minute call with an ASC-certified technician. And these are the technicians that actually help other shops across the nation. And so, you know, if you're not quite confident you'll be able to do that repair, you can purchase this 10-minute or 20-minute call with them, and they can help you walk through the material and ensure that when you're doing that repair, you're going to do a good job.
So they can tell you, oh, don't forget about that bolt that's tucked up under something that you're not going to see, and you might break something when you go to try to remove it.
Yep, exactly. That's what they're there for.
Now let's talk about parts, and you know, parts aren't always the same, they're not always the same quality. How do people know they're buying a good quality part?
Well, you know, that's the great thing about our marketplace at eBay. There's a couple features, right? We have our top-rated seller program, which really ranks our sellers, or benefits our sellers to showcase, you know, if they're a good seller, they offer good customer service, and they get good feedback from our buyers on their products, right, that buyers can shop accordingly for parts and accessories. The other great thing is that we offer product reviews as well on these products. And so buyers can write reviews and talk about, you know, the quality of the part if they're having issues with it or whatnot. And so they can really rely on their peers to do that research for them really look up to see what kind of part or if that part works for them. And given our full spectrum of value and the depth and breadth of our inventory, we do have a wide variety of parts, right? So depending on the consumer's choice or preferences. They can buy a genuine OEM if that's what, you know, they prefer. They could do a well-known branded aftermarket part, all the way through some, you know, private label versions as well that might be a more cost-effective solution for them. So it really just depends on your preference as a buyer, and the great thing is we have all those options for them.
Yeah, I know, using my wife's car again as an example, if I wanted to go out and buy the original equipment oil filter because I like the idea of sometimes using original equipment parts, sure enough, I could buy a box of four of them very economically. And I know that even I wanted to change the trim rings on her car. I wanted to take the hubcaps off and put something different on. And sure enough, on your site, they were there. And it happened to be a dealership selling through their eBay site as an eBay parts store, and you know, it just made it nice and easy to purchase stuff. So I think sometimes people think about eBay for a lot of things, but they don't think about eBay for parts. They might think about buying a car through eBay, but they don't always think about getting parts through eBay.
Yeah, and that's a great point. You know, eBay Motors as a whole, we do buy and sell cars. Or it's a marketplace for buying and selling cars, and not even just cars, motorcycles, ATVs, RVs, but we are a huge place for parts, and parts and accessories is actually the biggest category within eBay Motors. So we have parts and accessories for cars and trucks, but it even ranges out to other types of vehicles as well, like motorcycles and ATVs and side-by-sides and you name it. So, right, that's why we, you know, get our name for being one of the largest marketplaces for buying and selling all things automotive.
Yeah, it really is. And if people want to get more information about eBay Motors and maybe look up parts for themselves or set up their own little parts garage, how do they do that?
Yep, they just need to go to ebay.com/motors. You can start your shopping journey by telling us what your vehicle is through My Garage.
Well, Marie, thank you for taking time out of your Saturday morning and joining us up here in Boston, and have a great rest of the weekend.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
We need to take a break, pay some bills. My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. Our phone lines are open at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL. That could be the Sonomatics. It is.
I believe it is, sir.
The Sonomatics with guitar player Craig Fitzgerald, who has been on this program before. He also occasionally at midnight on the news talk station right in the middle of the dial, been known to spend some time with the overnight host. But car guy, got a bunch of interesting cars over the years. I've seen him in, including a pretty nice older Blazer right now. And he likes Vespas. So how can you not like a guy who likes Vespas? He's also the guy, he's the editor at Best Ride, where I give him a question and then he must work on it for half an hour to make it even more interesting. And Best Ride appears in there, the automotive content for most of the papers around here, whether it's the Quincy Patriot Ledger or the Brockton Enterprise or many, many Cape Cod Times, New Bedford, whatever they are, Providence Journal. They provide the automotive content for their websites. So if you're looking for a little bit of automotive information, you can get it. You can get it on bestride.com. You can check it all out. Well, I got an email from a PR company says, in an effort to protect consumers from unwittingly buying flood-damaged cars, Carco provides CheckThatVIN.com reports that include flood branding in its reporting. CheckThatVIN is the most comprehensive, their words, vehicle title history database in the industry. With hurricanes wreaking havoc in Florida and surrounding areas, hundreds of thousands of flooded cars hit the market and available for sale to unsuspecting individuals, reports. There has been reports all over the place about that. Carco also provides open recall information. It's CheckThatVIN.com. You can find out more information. Then there's a promo code that you can put in, and from and you check it out and see what kind of stuff is there. If the deal looks too good to be true, according to the general manager, you should physically inspect the vehicle and run some kind of VIN check. Well, and the reason I bring that up, and there's a lot of things you can do to check to see if the car has ever been involved in a flood. Some of it is, you know, look under the seats, look at the carpeting, look in the trunk, pull the spare tire out if it has one. If it has a spare tire mounted under the vehicle, look for mud and silt and stuff that can be part of the problem. But I got an email from someone this morning, and they said they went to the store, and they went and checked out a few things. And his headline is, "My car involuntarily turned into a duck boat." A couple of weeks ago, my trip to Salem's Walmart to get some stuff turned into a $3,000 venture when a freak thunderstorm deposited 8.14 inches of rain in Lynn and Salem, overwhelming the parking lot's drainage system. My 2016 Toyota RAV4 engine was flooded, though no water got into the interior of the cabin. It has 26,000 miles on it. I drive about $7,500 a year. Insurance paid for the dealership to repair the vehicle, less deductible, replacing the short block assembly, so everything but the cylinder head and the air mass sensor, gaskets, and other pieces and parts. Everyone I know counsels to, say, get rid of the car even after it's been repaired. They foresee corrosion issues, electrical problems down the road. All of these folks are well-meaning amateurs, so I thought I'd consult the doctor. The dealership said that the car before the flood had a trade-in of $16,000 post-deluge, $13,500. I want to know how they come up with that number, because there is no, I guess that's just what they're saying because they did the repairs, but there is no evidence that shows that a vehicle that's been repaired has less value than it did before it was repaired. If anything, you know, it has a new short block now. But anyway, so the question is drive or trade. The second question, given it's almost September, either purchase 2018 model with all the incentives or wait until October for the 2019. I'm gonna answer this question personally, like I try to with all emails, but there's always a question. What happens when a car is in a flood like that? Well, the good news is it was a freshwater flood, not a saltwater flood. If that was saltwater, the car would be done. A lot of corrosion issues, a lot of problems. Freshwater is what it is. It's rain. So if it didn't get into the interior, so there's no mold and mildew issues to worry about, now it's a matter of all the electrical connections. Well, the electrical connections under the hood of a car are designed to get wet because that is not a dry area. There's water continually splashing up inside there. So my instinct says to keep it. Unless there's something that just, something seems wrong. But I would also want to make sure that as part of the repairs they did, that they made sure that there was no water got into the transmission. There was no water got into the front and rear differentials. You want to make sure that there's no water contamination anywhere that could further hurt the system, because I'm not sure how long it sat in the water, but water could have made its way into the parts of the engine and drivetrain that are lubricated. That could be a problem. But if it's just a matter of the car got wet, maybe you started it up, it sucked up some water, when it sucked up the water, it damaged the engine block, and then it was time, then the engine was broken, and you fixed it, and it's on your way, and everything's good again. The problem is you always have that sort of nagging thought about, is this going to be a good car for the rest of the time I keep it? I keep cars for 5, 10 years, whatever the case is. Maybe I should think about trading it in. The car has, and you can trade it in with confidence because the car was, your insurance company paid to put the car in like new condition again, or like pre-damage condition. So the car should be in good condition. And even though it may have shown up on a check that VIN or Carfax or one of those things as an extensive insurance repair, it still should be, the trade-in value should be the trade-in value. It should be what it's worth, and you should be okay with it. If I was buying a car now, do I buy the 18s and try to take advantage of incentives, or do I go and buy a 2019? Again, it depends on how long you keep a car. If you keep a car, if you're somebody who keeps a car 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, the trade-in value is not going to change a whole lot when you go to trade it back in. If you're somebody who only keeps a car a couple of years, trading in a 2019 and 2021, it's going to be worth more than trading in a 2018 and 2021. So there could be some advantages to that. The other advantage sometimes with a newer car is you get more technology, a lot of cases, for the same amount of money. So there may be technology in the car that you're not being able to take advantage of because it's either not offered. Maybe they have a program where there's, you know, automatic emergency braking in the 2019s, and it was an option in 2018, or it wasn't available at all, whatever the case is. So you have to kind of look, what's the difference between the two cars, even if there was no incentives? So what's the difference between a 2018 and a 2019 feature-wise? And then compare, you know, apples to apples for that. And then look at what you have to do from that point going forward. And that's kind of how you figure it out. So, but I think a freshwater flood like that, if the water didn't get inside the car, and it's funny, you kind of think of everything on the outside, but if it didn't get inside the car, I don't think there's that much to worry about, providing it didn't sit in the water for a really long time. If it sat in the water for, you know, a day, well, that could be a problem because water was going to make its way into the drivetrain components. And depending on how long you drove with those components with water and oil mixed together, you're going to cause some wear and tear. So, but even if it did, and you got into a shop, they drained the transmission, the front and rear differentials, refilled it all with fresh fluid, put it all back together, I think you're in good shape. I think you're going to be okay. Let's talk about the car that got me around while I was on vacation, and that is the 2018 Nissan Armada. The Nissan Armada is the largest of Nissan's SUVs. It's powered by a 5.6-liter, 390-horsepower V8 engine connected to a 7-speed automatic transmission in rear-wheel or all-wheel drive configurations. There are 4 trim levels, SV, SL, Platinum Reserve, and the subject of our road test, the all-wheel drive Platinum. This large SUV has seating for up to 8, and even adults will be pretty comfortable in the third row seat. Like many 3-row SUVs, getting out of the third row can be a bit of a challenge. This big SUV has plenty of head and leg room with almost limo-like space in the second row. The controls are well sorted out and rely less on the touchscreen and more on knobs and buttons for the climate control and sound system. The first 2 row of seats are comfortable and supportive. The third row, a bit short on padding, but during my time with the Armada, I had 6 adults in the vehicle, and they all seemed reasonably comfortable, at least for the short drive they were in it. The dual-zone climate control keeps all the passengers comfortable, and front seats are both heated and cooled. Safety is addressed with a full suite of semi-autonomous features such as lane departure warning, automatic emergency braking, forward collision warning, backup intervention, and a round view monitor. Fortunately, I never had to test any of those. This model also had what they called the intelligent rear view mirror. This is actually a pretty slick system, and I wish I really appreciated it I kind of discovered what was going on sort of at the last minute. But here's how it works. When you shift into reverse, the rear view camera pops up on the rearview mirror. So rather than looking in the rearview mirror, or rather than looking in the rearview mirror and seeing the mirror reflection of what's behind you, you actually see the camera's view of what's behind you as if it's the rearview mirror. So in other words, if you have six people in the car and you go to shift into reverse to back up, or you're just driving down the road and you look in the rearview mirror, you actually see what's behind you, even though there's people's heads in the way. So it's kind of an optical illusion. You look in the rearview mirror and you go, I don't see the people sitting behind me. That's because the camera's actually showing what's behind you onto the rearview mirror. So it's actually a pretty slick thing. So it's pretty interesting. So even if you have, like I said, even if you have people in there, maybe you put a big box in the back, the third row seats, for instance, the head restraints fold pretty compactly into the rear seat, so the rear seat can fold down, which it does with power assist. But when the head restraints are in their upright position, they block a lot of the rear view out of the rear view mirror. But when you put it on the intelligent camera setting, you don't see anything except what's behind the car. So kind of interesting. Like many three-row SUVs, behind the third-row seat is a little bit tight when all the seats are in use, about 16 cubic feet, but expands to nearly 95 cubic feet with the seats folded. Performance from this 5.6-liter V8 engine is very good, and for those buyers looking to tow a vehicle, the Armada can tow about 8,500 pounds. Engine performance comes at a fuel economy penalty. During my time with the Armada, I averaged about 14.5 miles per gallon. Ride and handling are typical of a big SUV, some body roll, some slow steering. Ride is quite comfortable with the Armada soaking up suspension ruts and potholes. So even our less than perfect New England roads, this thing actually rode pretty well. The backup intervention system allows for easier parallel parking by applying the brakes if you get too close to an object. Although I will admit, I found that it wanted to apply the brakes even though I wasn't quite ready to do it. So I wanted to back up a little bit more, but it, I guess because my foot wasn't resting on the brake pedal, the car thought that I was going to back into something, which in fact I wasn't going to. The four-wheel drive system should be able to handle everything that the weather in the Northeast can throw at it. Additionally, the Armada should provide off-road family adventures. So I think you could put a family in this. You could go camping or whatever you want to do, go off-road. It looks pretty rugged underneath. The Nissan Armada is not for everyone, but if you're looking for a stylish, powerful, full-size SUV, the Armada is a good choice. If you're willing to trade fuel economy for comfort, passenger space, and technology, the Armada by Nissan should be at the top of your shopping list. Powered by a 390-horsepower V8 engine, fuel economy, EPA says 13 city, 18 highway. Like I said, I got around 14.5. And this, in the Platinum version, $66,696. So, a little bit pricey, certainly. Our phone lines are open, by the way, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Well, it's time for a trivia question. And the trivia question is, what car company said, life is a journey, enjoy the ride? Life is a journey, enjoy the ride. If you know the answer to that, give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030, and we will give you a prize, or a series of prizes, or something. We'll give you something. We'll give you something for being so smart. Also coming up at about 9:45, we are going to be talking with Jim Owens. He's the Ford Performance Marketing Manager, and we're going to be talking about the what is billed as the most famous paint job in motorsports history, and he's going to tell us about that and where you can see this heritage paint job, and it's referred to as the most famous paint job, and we'll have to find out why, and that's coming up at 9:45. So we can find out more about that from him. Speaking of Ford, Ford Ranger is priced at the upper end of the segment when this new Ford Ranger comes out. Ford Motor Company is pricing the revived Ranger more than $1,000 less than the segment-leading Toyota Tacoma as it prepares to re-enter the midsize pickup market. The 2019 Ranger, which goes on sale early next year, will start at $25,395, including shipping. Will top out at about $40,000, which is less than the Tacoma, which starts at $26,445, but more than the Colorado and the Canyon. I still say it's too expensive. I think it's too pricey. I think they're looking at, you know, I don't know. I think there's a market for a economical pickup truck, and I don't know if this is economical, but Ford said last week it opened dealer order banks and consumers can begin pre-ordering the pickups. The Ranger will come in three trim levels, XL, XLT, and Lariat. Ford will sell a two-door crew cab and four-door super crew configurations. It will offer both four-wheel and two-wheel drive in each configuration. The base XL 4x2 super cab with a six-foot box will be priced from $25,395 with shipping. The 4x2 Super Crew with the 5-foot box starts at $27,600. The most expensive Ranger Lariat 4x4 Super Crew will be priced at $39,480. That figure can top $40,000 if buyers choose the FX4 All-Road package, which is a $1,200 option. The FX4 package is ordered. Is offered on all four-wheel drive models. It comes with a terrain management system, first offered on the F-150 Raptor, and features four drive modes, normal, grass, gravel, mud, ruts, sand, and so forth. The control also features trail control, which acts as an off-road cruise control by accelerating or braking. First time I ever saw that, I think, was in a Toyota product. Pretty slick. You just sort of, it's like cruise control for off-road. Ford stopped selling the Ranger in the U.S. in 2011, it was regularly among the segment's top sellers, including number one as recently as 2004. Ranger sales routinely totaled more than 300,000 a year in the 90s. You see an awful lot of old Rangers kicking around still, and they are very popular with people. And we used to use them pretty extensively for light service vehicles at AAA. I don't know if we'll go to these. You know, you're starting to price close to the F-150s, so I'll have to save that. See what happens with that. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030.
All right, we got our buddy Rick from Boston.
All right, we haven't talked to Rick in a whole week. a week without Rick is like a week without ice cream. I don't know.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Rick, good morning.
Hey there, John.
So how's that? A week without Rick is like a week without ice cream?
Oh, no. Come on. You got to have ice cream every day.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, same here.
No, actually, I got a little gripe this week.
Uh-oh.
Well, yesterday, you know, my wife had to go with my daughters and babysit a little bit, and so I ran out to get pizza. And for supper, and these guys, you know, in the mall area were either, you know, backing up so far that they backed into the second parking spot, or they thought the white line was where they centered the car on top of it.
Oh, yeah.
And that, so, come on, people, you know, be considerate for other people. You don't, just because you got an SUV or Beamer or something like that, you don't need to take up two parking spots.
How about if you got a 24-foot box truck?
That I will give you. You can have four if you got to be driving that to the mall.
All right. But yeah, I mean, I know some people. I mean, you see some people, and most of the time they do it at the end of a parking lot. You know, they have kind of maybe a fancy car and they park diagonally across three parking spots and hope that nobody's going to scratch it. Or they're crying for attention and they want people to say, look at that jerk over there taking up all those spots. And they're also looking at their car at the same time. But yeah, there are people that absolutely just don't know how to park. And, you know, and that can always be a bit of a challenge. I was kind of staring out the window like I usually do when I get here early at the radio station, and I watched somebody pull up about oh, I would say 3 feet past the end of a parking space. But when they got out of their car, they saw how poorly they were parked, and they actually got back in and backed up a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I've had a pretty frustrating week with traffic myself this morning. I was in a left lane of a one-way street, and the lane was either turn left or go straight. Didn't make any difference. There was no markings. And I wanted to go about another 300 feet to the next left to turn left. The two people from the right-hand lane next to me cut me off and turned left in front of me so they could go down the left that was next to me. Yeah, I mean, just totally inappropriate. If I was accelerating fast, which I don't usually do, then I would be, you know,
on your test vehicle.
Yeah. And then what would happen is, you know, I would be running into them. So I had I had that happen a couple times, and then other than that, I had somebody else who did something stupid in front of me. And, you know, you're right. Come on, people. Let's just drive like normal people.
Yep.
That's the thing to do. So, yeah, you know, be courteous in your parking. You know, try to, you know, parking spaces are getting a little smaller because it's interesting. Parking spaces are getting smaller and vehicles are getting bigger. Have you noticed
that? Yesterday I was on my motorcycle, and I'm next to an Impala, and I'm looking at that, and I says, that's the size of the Nova when I bought it back in 1970.
Well, that is true, but on the other hand, with so many SUVs out on the market, you know, those have certainly gotten bigger. I mean, you look at the Honda CR-V, compared to the original ones, or a Toyota RAV4 compared to the original RAV4. The original RAV4 was a little two-door, little tiny SUV, and now they're pretty good size. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, it's sort of interesting. So, but yeah, you know, let's have people just behave. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay, Rick.
Dream on, John.
Yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well, you don't know this, but you're almost close to the answer of the trivia question. So, all right,
okay.
Rick. Thanks.
Have a good one.
All
bye.
Right, you too. Take care. Bye bye. All right. So, you'll take care of that. Let's see. I think we got a couple more calls, right? What do we got going on?
Yeah. Our next one is Eddie from Walpole.
All right. Let's talk to Eddie from Walpole. Eddie, is that you?
It is.
It is. So do you have an answer for trivia or a car question?
Actually, both.
All right.
All right. I'm going to guess Nissan for the question.
You're correct. Because you knew? Because you knew, or you just figured it followed the car review?
No, my wife read it this week in a magazine, I think in New England Living.
Really?
And they had mentioned something about that.
Well, that was the old, I don't know if you remember the commercial. I don't know how, I tend to remember a lot of nonsense that doesn't ever do anything for me in life, but this was the original, this was the Nissan commercial. It was sometimes referred to as the Field of Dreams commercial, where it showed a kid playing, you know, sort of like sandlot baseball. The ball gets hit, the kid goes running, the ball goes through a fence, and he ends up in the Nissan Dream Garage, where he met a guy who was the sort of kind of modeled after the guy who started Nissan. But it was, or Datsun, I guess, and walked around. He said, "This is the original 240Z. This is the original this. This is the original that." And that was, and the end of the commercial ended up, "Life is a journey. Enjoy the ride."
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah. So. Yep.
All right, my car question is: my daughter has a 2009 Honda Pilot.
Okay.
She had the belt tensioner replaced, aftermarket part. And about 3 months after, the center bolt snapped.
Oh, okay.
While she was driving. She had the car towed. They replaced it. 3 weeks later, the center bolt snaps. Is this a common problem with Pilots, or things that are just a freak of nature.
Well, you know, I kind of... I mean, you know, tensioners go bad. When the first one, when the factory one went bad, did it just kind of lose its tension?
It was the bearing was making noises.
Yep. Yeah, I want to say that the problem is the aftermarket replacement just is a lousy part, maybe.
Yeah, that's what the mechanic is saying.
Yeah.
And luckily, for some reason, they gave her the original parts back when they replaced the first tensioner,
mm-hmm.
and she kept the original bolt.
Oh, okay.
So now what they're going to do is replace the part again and compare the original bolt to the new bolt that comes with the part.
Yeah, I mean, and it could be the original bolt is a, you know, kind of a grade 5 heavy-duty bolt, and maybe that's the difference. You know, the factory tensioner is, you know, and the shop was probably trying to help her out because the factory tensioner is probably $250. The aftermarket one's probably half the price.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I guess if for some reason it happened again, if I was a shop, I'd say, hey, look, you know, we tried our best. We're going to go buy the factory. We're going to go get a factory tensioner and, you know, we'll put it on and, you know, help us with the price.
I think you're right. They're going to go that route this time.
Yeah, but right now, I mean, you know, good thinking. You know, try the factory bolt that went in it and see what happens and see how it goes from there, I guess, is about all you can do.
Yeah. Well, great show. Keep up the good work.
All right.
Enjoy Labor Day.
All right, you too. Take care. Bye-bye. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. I do like a compliment once in a while because I got the nastiest hate mail the other day from somebody. So, and it's nothing I could ever read on the air because it was so nasty. But but anyway, so I was accused of being, you know, in this for the money, and I'm in this to. The only money is I do programs like this and write all the newspaper columns and all that to add a little value to my job at work at AAA so they don't fire me. That's why I do this. You know, back to the tensioner in that Honda Pilot, there actually is a fairly specific installation procedure. But as long as you follow that, I don't see anything that should be a problem. It's just a matter of it's like a pressurized tensioner. So you just want to make sure that you've installed it properly. But other than that, it should be fine. So there's no reason to think that anything should break. So I'm kind of going with it's just a lousy design part maybe, and you know that's about all there is. And if the bearing went bad in the original one and everything else is holding the way it's supposed to, yeah, you know, put the factory part in and try from there. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Keith, where are we going?
Don, Cape Cod.
All right. Don, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I was hoping to hear on hold, but I couldn't. Anyhow, you're the guy who gave me your last wonderful connector for the extension cords, and you are the expert. I have a Dodge Caravan 3.3, and the coolant level is like 4 inches below the neck on the cap.
Okay.
And I was just wondering if I had cylinder head gasket problems or whatever. The gauge doesn't move, but it doesn't seem to retrieve from the reservoir.
Okay.
I changed the coolant. I even washed out the reservoir and marked it high and low, and I didn't know if that was with the bug, the engine.
Well, let's start with what that tank does, and you're absolutely right. It, as the coolant expands, it goes into the tank, and as it cools, it sucks it back in. And it does that by way of the radiator cap. So let's start with replace the radiator cap. Because
the hose is good. I cut the ends off it just to make sure it was a tight fit, no leaks.
Yep. Yeah, but let's start with replacing the radiator cap. The radiator cap, what may be happening is when the engine heats up, maybe the coolant does expand, but it doesn't suck it back in. Maybe it doesn't expand, but it sucks it back in. So let's look at the radiator cap first, and you know that's a cheap and easy fix, and barely costs $10 for a new radiator cap. So let's start there. The second thing you can do is, if you can find somebody who still has an exhaust gas analyzer, so sort of the thing when we used to do.
I remember that. They used to
stick them in the tailpipe. If you can find somebody who still has one of those for diagnostic purposes, they've gotten really small now. They're 4 and 5 gas analyzers, but those things do a really good job of checking for head gaskets. What you do is you just basically take the probe that you would normally put in the tailpipe, you stick it over the top of the radiator, you know, take the cap off, stick it over the top of the radiator,
right.
Let it suck up some fumes, and if it shows hydrocarbons, you know, if it shows more than 10 parts per million hydrocarbons, well, you have fuel getting into the coolant, which means you got a head gasket somewhere along the line that's starting to go bad. You can also go, and shops have them. You can go buy one yourself if you want to. It's called a block check kit, and it's basically a chemical that you take this thing, put it over the radiator. If the chemical turns color, you know, you have a head gasket leak. I think those are $25-$30, something like that. You might even be able to get one to use it at if you buy the stuff from like an AutoZone or something like that. But a lot of good garages will have those too. So, you know, I would check. How many miles on this engine?
104,000.
And it's a 3.3?
It did. 3.3.
Yeah. It's possible, I suppose, that you can have a head gasket problem. But
I didn't know.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense when you mention the cat, but. You know, it's just like these Chrysler products having, and I had a 98, and, you know, they all seem to be problematic, but you get to be an expert after having all the problems.
Yeah, well, that is true, and I don't care if it's an expert with your car or with your house or whatever the case is.
Anything.
So,
The devil you know is better than the devil you don't know.
So.
I just, one little sideline, like, I had, it was incontinent, so it was leaking, the condensate was leaking out of the floorboard, the rug was wet and all of this.
Yeah.
But short and a long story, there's a tube that goes out through the firewall. Well, that kind of drips in capillary action, it goes back towards the firewall, and that sponge insulator, that foam sponge insulator, it doesn't work, so you've got to put some, you know, silicone caulking on there or something, and that's the problem to solve it. All the things that you would never think would ever be a problem.
Yeah, well, better your car have that problem than you.
That's true.
Yeah,
I appreciate your sense of humor. We know you're not an intern and you're a doctor.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, check. You know, I would go. You know, I'd go to the local parts store, buy a radiator cap, try it, and see what happens. I mean, it sounds like you're right on top of it. You're making sure there's, you know, you're not running low on coolant, and try that and see where it sets afterwards.
I appreciate.
Okay.
That. Sometimes the obvious things are the easiest.
Well,
and we overlook them.
I'll let you know there was somebody I know and pretty good do-it-yourselfer, and they had a problem. They had a upper radiator hose that was collapsing, and they first started and they replaced the radiator hose, and then they replaced the water pump because they were convinced somehow the water pump and the thermostat was causing the issue. And again, it was just a radiator cap. I said to them, put a radiator cap on it. They're like, oh yeah, that fixed it. You know,
it's
so they
amazing.
Went through. They went
that's
through.
That's why you're so good.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that, but that, you know, I try to look at the basics first before you get too complicated, and you know, look at the simple and easy things first, and then kind of go from there.
And it's cheaper.
Yeah, well, that you know, if you are going to guess at something, guess at the cheap stuff.
I love it.
All right,
my day, John, as usual.
All right, take care. Bye-bye now.
I was going to say, John Paul, he should open up his own car doctor's office.
I don't think so. That's what this is. The car doctor's office is open. Keith, where are we going now?
All right. Oh, man, I'm sorry. Having a little too much fun here. Let's see. We're going to Art in Mattapoisett. Art in Mattapoisett.
All right. All right. Let's go talk to Art. Let's see. There's Art now. Art.
Here I am.
There you are.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
I got an internet connection. It's a little wonky sometimes. I do remember that that Nissan commercial. That was from the 90s, and there was this Asian guy talking to a little kid about
that was one of their commercials. And I remember I was at the New York Auto Show, and they kind of tried to recreate the commercial at the auto show. And the hundreds of people that were at the press conference, they handed everybody a baseball. And for the longest time, I had the Nissan baseball or Datsun. I think it was actually a Datsun baseball kicking around my desk, and I finally gave it to a little kid. So,
well, anyway, I have another question for you.
Sure.
Or I have a contribution and a question, or one of the two, anyway. Both. I have both.
Okay.
So for the last caller, can you just check his rearview mirror and see if you're seeing any smoke or steam, rather, going up the tailpipe? Because I've had a number of bad head gaskets over the years. And I've never had anything leaking out of the head gasket that you could see, but I've had plenty of chocolate in my crankcase,
and
chocolate milk in my crankcase, and steam going out the tailpipe.
Yeah. When it gets so bad that you can see it in the oil, you see it coming out the tailpipe. You're absolutely right.
But outwardly, if you weren't paying attention, the car was running okay.
Yeah.
At one point, I think we pulled the spark plugs after it got especially bad, and I had a geyser of antifreeze flying easily 12 feet up the spark plug hole.
Wow. that's a pretty bad head gasket or a cracked cylinder head. Yeah. And that's why I went back, you know, whatever, 20 years ago when everybody had an exhaust gas analyzer that did inspections, and it was such an easy way to check for a cylinder head gasket problem, because even if they were just starting to be a problem, and when I ran the AAA Auto Diagnostic Center over here in Rockland, that became part of our regular used car inspection. If you brought in a car that was, 4 or 5 years or older, we would sniff every radiator just to see if there was a hint of a head gasket, especially way back then, the 3-liter V6 engines that were in the Dodge Caravans and back then Plymouths, I guess, too. You know, those were so common to have head gasket problems. And if you could catch them, if you could help somebody and catch it before the person bought the car, it was always a lot easier.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of gaskets, but primarily, I think you got to check your spark plugs to see if they're green.
Yep.
And of course, if you got a geyser coming out of your spark plug hole, that's a sure indication.
There's no question at that point. You're absolutely right.
Hey, I got another comment. You were talking about the size of people's vehicles and an inverse relationship to their parking ability. I think there's a direct correlation to the size of people's butts driving these big vehicles. And if they would park maybe in the second parking lot out, they'd find themselves less frequently on a Walmart cam embarrassed on YouTube.
it's funny, the people that are in the best shape that I work with park at the end of the parking lot.
I park as far away as I can and I walk it. And
yeah,
you save all kinds of dings in your car. You save on potential accidents or hitting some little kid that's walking around that you can't see. Those parking lots are a nightmare. Screw that. I'm gonna walk.
Yeah, and the other, and I said something about parking lots actually, parking spaces actually getting smaller. Where I work, the parking lot was originally set up for 500 cars. And when they restriped the parking lot a bunch of years ago, they shaved a little bit of space off of each parking spot, and they added 50 more parking spaces by making the spaces a little bit narrower. But now everybody's got door dings in their car. So
well,
yeah.
Not only that, but what did it cost to do that, to remove the lines and paint new ones?
It needed to be done anyway, so it was looking pretty shabby. So, but even here, I look out the window here at the radio station, and the parking lot's all been repaved and restriped, and I kind of look at it and go, I don't know, those spots look a little narrower than the old ones that were there. But
advice to people is, have a look at the parking spaces that are available a little further out and consider how much longer it's going to take you to drive around trying to find that close space and just hoof it.
Yeah, I have no problem parking a little bit away just because Yeah, if you see me, I could use the exercise.
And if you look up YouTube, you look up Walmart Shoppers.
Oh, yeah, I have.
The security cam. Yeah. Holy cow.
No, you anyway, look fine, that's John.
Well, thanks, Keith.
That's my 2 cents for the day.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, good advice. All right, take care
see
now.
See you later.
Yep, bye-bye. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Keith, do we have another call?
They all disappeared.
Oh, they did. Okay, well, if you would like to join us, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030.
And I'm looking out the window, and I see Mr. Paul Sullivan coming in.
Yeah, so I saw him walking up as well. So, speaking of big crossovers, green cars are on Kia's horizon. Kia designers and engineers have had a chance to let their creative and performance juices flow with the vibrant 2018 Stinger sedan. The Stinger is an awfully nice car, by the way. And, you know, they kind of designed that in Germany. And they based it on a variety of different things. Kia does a great job of copying. But it has Lotus design. It's BMW's Lotus engineering. BMW shared some engineering with them. Well, they hired away people. The brand's first crossovers, meanwhile, are outperforming their 2017 sales so far. The freshened Sorento, the recently redesigned Sportage, and the electrified Niro all hit the market in 2017. Expect to see the Niro's green lineup expand with a fully electric version edition soon. In fact, we gave that fully electric version an award at the New England Motor Press Technology Conference. There's going to be something called a Telluride coming up in the future. But the lineup right now at Kia, and I remember when they barely had a car, but the Kia Rio, the Kia Soul, which I like the little Soul a lot. I think it's a pretty good little car. The Soul EV, a little short on range, 111 miles, you know, which was great 10 years ago, not so good now. Forte, which does well. The Forte got some design cues from Kia for 2019. Optima, the freshened up 2018 Optima mid-size sedan, gets the Stinger-inspired LED daytime running lights. The Cadenza, which is a full kind of a full-size sedan, really nice car. Again, the Stinger, the K900, which is the luxury car that's coming out in fourth quarter 2019. That flagship is going to be 3.3-liter twin-turbo engine, so same as in the Stinger. The Sportage was redesigned for 2017, so we won't see much change in that. The Sorento, they got kind of a mid-model makeover for that, and it gets new front and rear trim for 2019. The cabin was given a little bit of an upscale touch, and we'll have to wait and see because there's a new Santa Fe and Santa Fe Sport coming out. So that will probably also change the Sorento as well. The Telluride's Kia's brand new three-row crossover, which debuted as a concept at 2016 Detroit Auto Show. There was speculation what was going to happen with it, and it looks like that's going to happen probably in the 2020 model year, and that's going to take the place of the body-on-frame Borrego. And the Borrego was a hard-riding truck in its very first rendition. We'll have to wait and see where it goes. And then again, the Niro and the Sedona, the minivan. You know, people forget about minivans, but they're still out there. 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030.
We're going to talk to Frank in Medford.
Let's talk to Frank in Medford. Frank, is that you? Frank?
Hello, Jeff. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Morning. This is a continuous side run, 2009 Traverse. You gave me the information. They have the timing chain changed on it, you know.
Okay.
And I asked my daughter, I says, how's it running? She says, well, when I go to pull on the highway, it hesitates. So I told her to take it down to AutoZone and have it another readout on the Arriva. Mm-hmm. And it says that the number one cylinder is misfiring. Before
okay.
It was 1 in 5 was misfiring.
All right.
The timing was bad. And so I'm saying, like, did they not pick that up after they put the timing chain, or they never put it on the reader after they did the timing chain?
Hmm. Or they did something like, you know, or there's a spark plug wire or a plug that's not good, or an injector that's not good, or something like that. So at this point, I would want to, if I was running the shop, I would take the car back in, I would rescan it, look at things that would cause a misfire specifically in that plug one. So I would look at the plug, the wire, the coil, the injector, and even maybe the intake manifold to make sure that, you know, it's sealed up properly the way it was supposed to go back together, just to make sure that there's nothing going on with it. So, yeah, does the check engine light flash on it once in a while?
Actually, she didn't mention the check engine. Well, yeah, you know something? The converter was messed up anyway.
Right.
That the bad converter was cleaned out, and the guy said it was empty and there was nothing that could, you know, goof up the engine or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that check engine light's been on. So, and the dealer knew it. He said that, you know, he'd do the converter. He had to order it. It cost like $1,500.
Yeah.
So the converter, that doesn't tell me whether it was, you know, anything, because the light was already on, know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the reason, the code on that is the same, it's an inefficient converter.
Right. Yeah, but if it's, inefficient converter is one thing, but if it's showing up with a cylinder one misfire, I would want to look at, you know, that's one of the reasons, you know, when it was, you know, misfire one and five, that's one of the reasons that was causing the, you know, the original converter to melt. So, I would be focusing my attention right on that cylinder one misfire and figure out what it is.
Yeah. So in other words, I should maybe try calling the dealer and seeing ask them why the one is still misfiring.
Yeah. Or? Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And they should say to you, well, bring it back in and let's take a look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Should be that simple.
Yeah, well, before he waived the diagnostic because they said the timing chain was no good.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's going to go for another diagnostic now to do the.
If it's a decent shop, you know, they should at least take a look at it for you. I mean, how much money did she spend there?
Oh, she bought the car there. It's a dealer. It's a dealer in Wakefield or whatever.
Well, so she's, you know, so
Chevy dealer. It's a Chevy dealer. It's a Chevy Diverse. I mean,
Yeah. So, based on that, you know, she's a customer. So, you know, you would think that at least take some look, you know, look at it and kind of see what things are up with it.
Right. What about? I had a question on Maxi Life oil. Why? What is the difference between that and regular conventional, you know, the blended oil, synthetic blend? They got a Maxi blend. Is that just an additive that they throw in there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it used to be oil was oil. You know, it was, and, you know, and I remember an old friend of mine used to work for Quaker State. And he used to tell me how Quaker State was the best oil because of, you know, whatever the reasons was, it was the best oil.
Right.
And then he went to work for a different oil company, told me how they had all of a sudden had the best oil. And I said, it's only because that's where you're working now. You know, and then what happened, you know, there's max life oil, there's extended life oil, there's high mileage oil. And a lot of it is just, you know, a lot of it is they add a little bit of an additive here or there. And, you know, maybe it does something to extend, you know, to soften up seals and stuff like that. But, you know, that's really about all it really does. So, I don't, you know, I was in an auto parts store yesterday and I walked by the oil shelf and I was amazed at the amount of different kinds, you know, not even different brands of oil, just the different kinds of oil. I'm like, well, there's conventional, synthetic blend, synthetic, high mileage, max life. And I bet there was, you know, in, you know, 5W30, there was like six different variations of it. You know, check your oil and change it when it's dirty. That's what makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. John. All right, take care. Bye-bye now. 617-770-3030 is our number. Keith, we got anything going on, or is it time for you to call Jim?
Let's do quickly Ken from Topsfield, because he called last week.
Okay, well, I'll take care of our friend from Topsfield, and why don't you get Jim on the phone?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good morning.
Hello. And good morning to you, John Paul. First of all, just a point of information. Somebody said earlier when they called in, I think it was the tension thing guy call, that he couldn't hear. When I was on hold now for, I don't know, a few minutes, three or four or some damn thing, not a sound.
Hmm.
There's no program in the background, okay? And that happened last week, and I looked at my phone because I was on a mobile, and I was still connected. So I, and then this guy earlier, and while I was just on talking to the nice lady, it was the same. So I'm just making ROI aware of it.
Okay.
Of that.
All right. All right. Well, we'll talk cool. to the engineering staff here.
Cool.
Okay.
Now, I have a neighbor I ride with. He has an 08 Lexus GS 350, I think, or something.
Okay, yeah.
And he thought it was burning oil. He took it to a place that did an oil flush back thing. And he noticed that he's still burning oil. He thinks there's something wrong. They said there could be, I don't know. They went back and they said, you know, you could be a gasket or there could be something else. Or the car's getting along in mileage, 140,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so I said, listen, let's not jump the gun here. So he's a young guy, you know, and I looked at the dipstick. Well, he said it was down. So I pulled out, we were at the parking lot of the MTA, and
mm-hmm.
pulled out the dipstick. Old dipsticks, I've had several cars, and usually there's between the high and the low of the ad and
mm-hmm.
the fold mark, it's
yep.
maybe an inch.
Mm-hmm.
This car was like an inch and a, well, I won't say an inch and a half, but inch and three-eighths,
mm-hmm.
a lot. And then I started thinking, this car holds like 6 or 7 quarts of oil. It
mm-hmm.
holds a lot more oil than the old 4 or 5
yep.
with a filter. He put in, I don't know, maybe a couple quarts. It was down quarter inch below the low.
Yep.
And 900 miles later, he had to add oil.
Yep.
He says, I've got troubles. I said, old cars use oil.
Yep.
I said, there's a difference between using oil and burning oil. So my question is to you is this, is the marker really symbolic of 1 quart? I'm starting to think, no, my mind always used to think it was down a quart,
yep.
right? Down a quart.
Yeah.
Or, and finally, the fact that you add a little oil or a quart at 1,000
miles. If I had a car that was burning a quart of oil in 900 or 1,000 miles, and the repair was going to be, let's do something nice and simple. Valve seals, for instance. Valve seals are relatively simple repair, but it's also $600-$700 probably on that particular car. So, you know, based on just that, you could buy 300 quarts of oil.
Right.
So you right. could go 300,000 miles before
yeah.
before you had a, you know, before the cost of the repair offset the amount of oil you put in it. Now,
right.
I think what I would do is just drive the car, and every 1,000 miles or so, I'd pull the dipstick, see how the oil looks, and I'd just top it back up to the full mark. And it might be a half a quart, it might be a quart, it might be a quart and a half, but I'd just top it
right.
up to
Who
the
cares?
Full mark and leave it alone.
And if it is, and if it was coming out the gasket, if that is the case, I mean, cars do use oil, right, Doc?
Yeah. Even the best engine in the world burns a little bit of oil because the oil coats the inside of the cylinder walls, and when the spark plug fires off, it burns up the oil that's coated the cylinder wall. So it's a normal procedure of combustion. So I wouldn't worry about it. You know, I just write it off as age. You know, I can't do as many push-ups as I used to. You know, I'm just getting old.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on.
So that's how I'd write it off. So.
Hi, Jim.
So I'd leave it at that. All right.
Good morning.
Well, that's the easy way to do it.
All right.
Hey, I think with us on the phone is our friend from Ford. Jim Owens from Ford Motorsports. He is the Ford Performance Marketing Manager. Jim, good morning, and welcome to the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Well, good morning. I'm so glad to be on in Boston.
Well, I understand it's the most famous paint job in racing history. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, and we're so pleased to be part of this. Back in the 60s, you know, Carroll and his Merry Band of Hot Rodders and Henry Ford II took on Enzo Ferrari. And they beat them in 66, 67, 68, and 69. And in 1968, they had a partnership with Gulf and ran these beautiful blue and orange cars. and went on to win in 68 and 69. And those colors and those wins, the only Ford car to ever win Le Mans twice, generated probably the most recognized color scheme in racing history. And we're so glad to pay homage to that original GT40 chassis 1075 that won in 1968.
So you're gonna give me a 2019 Ford GT?
I have the keys right here.
Yeah.
You can take it either up on 128, or you can take it out the Mass Pike. Yeah. You know, somewhere between Boston and Worcester.
Yeah. It's the same story as always. It's a sign that says, you know, free beer yesterday. You know, I'm always just a day behind somehow. So, yeah.
Yeah, we're out here in Monterey, and we did the reveal at Laguna Seca, which is obviously one of the most famous racetracks in the United States, at WeatherTech Speedway at Laguna Seca. And we had an opportunity last night to do something that was absolutely incredible. We took the 2019 chassis 1075 and a 2006 Ford GT that were all done in the Gulf Heritage color schemes, and we took them on two laps around the famous raceway, including going down the corkscrew, which is one of the famous turns there, and created a moment that we think that, you know, listeners of your radio program this morning who are into cars will really enjoy.
Yeah, and that's probably, you know, that was probably one of those things that, you know, people that are true motorsports enthusiasts, I bet there was some people that almost had a tear in their eye seeing that happen.
Yeah, there were quite a bit, and it goes from the, you know, the famous race car drivers like Derek Bell, who was there, you know, to the folks who worked on the cars originally. We had a gentleman named Brian who did some of the fabrication on the car originally, who was there, and literally all he wanted to do was go up and touch chassis 1075. And see the insides and the materials that he worked on. And it was really moving. So you have anywhere from a famous race car driver to the fabricator who is, you know, interested in this heritage and glad that Ford Motor Company and the Gulf team came up with the 2019 heritage car.
Yeah, no, I saw the pictures of it, and it's a beautiful car, and it's a beautiful, you know, the car, the Ford GT is just a beautiful car to start off with, but you know, when it was in that kind of Gulf fuel tribute colors, it's so different that it's, you know, it's not, you know, Ferrari racing red. It's a car that really, it looks great. It really does.
It's interesting you say that. It is instantly recognizable. Like, you know, even from the casual race fan, now I'm a hardcore race fan, right? I mean, I've been, you know, going up to New Hampshire International Speedway up there until, you know, basically from the first time they had a NASCAR race.
Yep.
I'm a hardcore race fan. I get it. But my daughters, I have three daughters, one of whom was born in Worcester, Mass., who are casual race fans. They look at that car and they understand what it means. And it's such a great thing to be a part of. Ford Motor Company is proud to be a part of this, you know, celebrating, you know, with this innovation and technology that we put into the car. So not only is it a wonderful performing vehicle that was able to go through Le Mans and learn all sorts of things for aerodynamics that could appear in the Explorer you're driving years down the road, but it is a beautiful car as well. So it's a farm follows function vehicle, and the Gulf livery just enhances that.
It really does. And the GT Heritage Edition has some other features too. There's I guess the car has a lot of extensive carbon fiber, but some of the carbon fiber is exposed in it, right?
Yeah, you have the opportunity. So we did two versions of the car. You know, one for the hardcore old school, just by its the heritage. And if you think of the cars from the 60s that carry the Gulf logo, one of the things, not only the Gulf logo, but the Gulf livery, one of the things that was iconic on it was that white rondel with the black number.
Mm-hmm.
So we produced one that could be with a white rondel and a black number, so the customer can choose the number they want to put on it. We also did an exposed carbon fiber rondel, both on the hood and on the doors that ghosts the number 9 in a black in the exposed carbon fiber. Mm. And it is stunning. I mean, you know, the Ford GT in and of itself, you know, 647 yeah. horsepower out of an EcoBoost V6, right? So the technology is there, and we think that exposed carbon fiber enhances that technology.
Yeah, it really does. Jim, if people want to see more information about a car that is, for most of us, sort of unobtainable, but if they want to see it, kind of live it a little bit, can they go to Ford's website, or is there a special website?
Yeah, they can go. They can go directly to Ford.com and then select GT, and we even have what we call a configurator, where the customer who's coming into Ford.com can actually build out their Ford GT in the way they want it.
Yeah, is it because I know you? Is there a like friends and family discount?
Yeah, there's a friends and family discount on it. Actually, the pricing of this car it's going to be starting at, you know, about $500,000.
Yeah, well, if $500,000 for some people just fell out of their pocket, spare change, but to see a car like this and appreciate a car like this, you know, it's fantastic stuff. And I want to, thank Ford for building this and really looking at the heritage that Ford did record-breaking things with the original Ford GT40, and, you know, to kind of bring that heritage forward is a great thing. And thanks to Ford for doing it.
Well, thank you so much, and we are so glad to do it. And, you know, Henry Ford II wanting to go after Enzo Ferrari in the 60s, but bore out technology from the racetrack. 50 years later, we are doing the same thing. And we think it is a fitting tribute to the first Henry Ford. I don't know if you know this, but in 1901, Henry Ford had run a couple of businesses into the ground. He had gone to work for a gentleman by the name of Thomas Edison, who you might have heard of.
I've heard of him, yeah.
And he went and decided he still had a dream to put America on wheels. And he chose to do that by building a race car. And he challenged the reigning champion of the time in 1901, Alexander Winton, who was from the New England area, to a 10-lap grudge match race. He won that race. He sold the car that day. He sold the trophy that day. He grabbed investors out of the stands, and 18 months later started Ford Motor Company. We think that this GT was true to that heritage back in 1901 when Henry, who retired 1-0 as a race car yeah. driver, he only ran once, started it on performance, and we think this heritage GT today is a tribute not only to Henry Ford I, Henry Ford II, the entire Ford family, for the innovation and technology that our consumers can benefit from, that we take from the racetrack.
Was that the sweepstakes car?
That was the car called Sweepstakes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Exactly
well,
right.
Well, and I don't know if you had anything to do with it, but I had the opportunity to drive the reproduction of that car. And
Did you come out to Detroit to drive it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was part of the program when we did that, and it's such a funny story. We thought, the Henry Ford Museum thought that they had a replica of that vehicle. Right, so we thought we had a replica of it.
Yep.
And then when we started digging into the research of it, we were going to come up and celebrate 100 years of Ford racing back in 2001, we found out that we had had the original car the entire time.
Wow.
So we worked with engineers, and we rebuilt the components using tooling from that era, and we rebuilt the one that we had, and then we made two exact copies of it. And we gave journalists like yourself the opportunity to ride in it, some of them around Greenfield Village, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a neat piece of history where, you know, the innovation and technology that our men and women of our engineering community now live and strive to deliver comes from some of these performance derivatives that go back all the way to 1901.
Yeah. No, it's really pretty amazing. Hey, Jim, thanks for taking time out of your Saturday morning and getting up. Well, it's even kind of early in California, so.
Yeah, but we're going to be out by the racetrack by 7:00 today and watch all those historic vehicles at the Motorsports Monterey reunion.
There you go. Put something on Facebook Live for us, will you?
We'll take
please,
a couple
right. We'd love to see it.
All right.
Enjoy.
Take care, Jim. Bye-bye. That was Jim Owens. He's the manager of Ford Motorsports. And speaking of hot rod people, there's Paul Sullivan right
yes.
there.
All right. We drive into the parking lot.
Yep.
And my wife says, wow, what a nice car that is there. At the.
Yeah, that was a nice car that
is
I
that
saw.
Is that the car you drove
the
in?
The red one?
With? Yeah.
The red one? Yes. Yes.
Is it? What is it?
It's a Nissan.
That's what she
370Z.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's we'll do the review next week, but right. it's getting a little as nice as it looks, top up or top down. It's getting a little dated feeling, but we'll get into that. But
looks
it's
small to me.
It is small.
Okay,
it is small, and because it's a two door, and we were talking with our buddy Rick from Boston about parking spaces earlier. You need a wide parking space because you need to get the door open all the way so
yeah.
you get in and out.
Yeah.
And I will readily admit I'm not as flexible as I used to be.
No. Yeah. None of us are.
Here's his letter, by the way.
Yeah.
He sent you a letter?
Oh, I yes. finally got Rick's letter?
Yes.
My goodness. He's been sending
you want
that
me to soak it in water he, before you
he's
open
been,
it?
He's been sending you letters every week.
He's been sending me this letter over and over again for forever, it seems.
What's that granular stuff coming out of the seal?
Who knows? We trust Rick. He's right, okay. Hey, so what's up with the Irish
yeah,
parade
he's a cool
today?
Guy.
Music, and more Irish music. I'm raring to go.
You sound it. Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's a beautiful day. Get out there.
And that's what I'm going to try to do.
Yeah.
Hey, the piano guy means it's time for me to go. The very best in Irish music coming up with Paul Sullivan in the Irish Hip Parade. Like it happens every Saturday. It's like I can only go by what.
All right,
you know,
that's Keith.
What I'm told.
Keith
you know?
Cued him. Keith poked him
Keith,
in the back.
Keith. His whole purpose in life, you know, that
keep
radio expression,
tie.
Hit the post.
Yep.
That's what he does. Hit that post. So that's what he does.
He does
so,
it well.
We got
so,
a few seconds. I
yeah,
think
so,
we can talk
no,
over
we,
this.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is
yeah,
nice
we'll,
music.
No,
we,
we'll, you hit the right.
Yeah,
get out.
Yeah, well, yeah,
leave
get,
me alone.
Yeah, get out.
Go.
That's,
five.
That's what I need to do.
Don't leave Mad. Just leave.
All right. Don't leave Mad. Just leave. Right. I understand. Yeah. Hey, until next week.
I can't miss until you're gone.
Wear your seatbelt. Drive safely. Be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Over the long weekend.
And stay tuned.
See you all next week. Bye-bye.
All right, and stay tuned for Paul Sullivan, the Irish Hip Parade on WROL.
Still in bed, I left for Manus Corphy, Tralee and Malin Head. From the narrow streets of Belfast, I got the train to Dublin town. From Moneygall and Donegal, Mayo and County Down. From the rocks of Connemara,